Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Dirty Giants podcast. We got an awesome story for you guys this week. Keaton Arthurton, he killed an awesome buck this year on the archery hunt, and it's just a dream buck. Just kind of has a little bit of everything, super mass, and is an awesome story. But before we start, I just want to thank the sponsor of our podcast, Ryder Industries. That's R-Y-D-R Industries. They just came out with a bipod, the Fat Boy 6, and I have my hands on one now, and I've been using it for a couple weeks, and it's my favorite bipod I've ever had. It's carbon fiber, and there's a couple things I really like about it. You can do a fourth turn, and that's how you extend the bipod, so it's really quick. And then my favorite feature about it is the pan feature, so you can set your bipod, and then there you can pan it left and right without having to reset your bipod, and it will actually go 365 degrees. So Hunter over there has done a really good job with this, and they're now available. So if you go to his website, you can get your hands on one for yourself. Again, that's R-Y-D-R. Anyways, let's get into the big buck story. Thanks again for getting on, Keaton.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome. Well, I guess I kind of just wanted to help the listeners get to know you a little bit, maybe like how you got started hunting and kind of go from there if that works.
Yeah, perfect. So I'm originally from Missouri, Southwest Missouri, and so I grew up hunting whitetails. My dad, he didn't really grow up hunting, but when I was young, he wanted to try and get into it. A couple of his brothers got into it. And so we just kind of learned together as I was around 8, 9 years old, just going out and kind of figuring it out on ourselves, just putting tree stands up and just going out and kind of just enjoying the outdoors. I didn't really kill too many. The first couple of years I killed my first one with him, and it was just, you know, nothing big, but it was one of the best experiences, just getting to kill that first deer with my dad. And that one buck kind of set it all off for me. After that, he didn't really have to push me to go and get in the tree stand. It was just going out and having fun. That's how I really got into it. And I didn't really think about hunting mule deer very often when I grew up, and I never really thought I was going to be living in Utah, really. But I met my wife out here going to school, and we decided to live out here, and finally her family's been hunting for years and years, and so I just started putting in, not thinking too much of it, and that's how I really got into Western hunting, was through my wife's family.
Okay, that's way cool. So,
yeah,
probably a little bit of a change, I'm assuming, the difference between the hunting out east, I guess, and then hunting out west. Like, what were you would say was, like, the biggest challenge in, like, kind of learning, I guess, the differences and stuff?
I think just public land out here is pretty easy to come by, right? There's a ton of public land you can walk for miles and not even worry about crossing the line. But back home, it was a lot of private land. You didn't have land. There was a lot of knocking doors and getting permission, so that was a little difficult back home. But out here, I would say just trying to find the right location to go, just because there's so much land.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you moved out to Utah with your wife, you've been kind of putting in, and then have you hunted a few years, or is this like one of your first years that you actually have a tag out here?
It's the first year I've had a tag out here. Yeah. But I've hunted with, my wife's family. All of her uncles have the, lifetime tag, so they get a tag every year. So the last 2 years I've been rifle hunting with them. So I've got a little bit of the feel of where I was hunting, but, it's the first tag that I've, I've had in my pocket.
Oh, dang. That's awesome. So
Yeah.
if you're good with it, like let's get into this story. Like you killed an absolute giant buck. So I guess like kind of start from this first, like you drew the tag, like kind of like what are your thoughts? What are the first like things you're doing and stuff?
Yeah. So I grew up with one of my best friends back in Missouri, and one of the first things he had ever told me when I moved out here is when I draw out to invite him, he doesn't care, he'll make it out here. So one of the first things when I drew out, I contacted him, and he booked his plane tickets to come out and hunt with me. So
Oh, no.
it wasn't. Sorry.
I said that's a good friend. That's awesome.
Yeah, he's a great friend, and I knew it was going to be a solo hunt right away, so that was comforting right there. But
then from there you draw the tag, and then
yeah.
sorry, I keep cutting you off. I think there's a little lag on this. I might need to find a better way to record them, but. No, I keep cutting you off. Sorry, go
No, you're fine. I think we just start talking at the same time.
ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, so anyways, I draw the tag out, I contact him, and one of my wife's uncles, he does some guiding, so just some friends and some people he knows. He goes out and guides a lot. So this specific unit that he goes out on, is the unit I drew out on, and he does a lot of elk hunts, over the counter elk hunts and spike hunts. So in those hunts, I kind of just picked his brain on a couple of things places I should start, and he sent me a location where he had seen a really nice deer back in 2021, and he said it was really young, so it was kind of a long shot to go out there and see if that buck was still in there. So
Right.
it was June, I think it's June 28th is when I first went out and kind of scouted at the area. There's still a little bit of snow up there. But I went out and put cameras up, and it was a beautiful area, and I kind of just went off of his pin that he dropped me, and I just kind of hoped that there was something in there that I could go after. And I think it was the second time I went and checked cameras. I checked them every other week, so I gave him about 2 weeks in between. And the second time and they weren't really grown. It was still like beginning of June, so you couldn't really tell what they were going to blow up into. But I had a specific buck on camera that he had already grown into past his ears, and he was really heavy, and he didn't really have eye guards yet. He was just growing into his G2, so I couldn't really quite tell how big he was going to get. I just knew it was going to be a really big deer. And then throughout really the whole summer, I got a couple good 4 points, one really good 3 point, but I really didn't get this specific buck on camera until towards the end, almost two season. I got him right at the beginning of August. So just 2 weeks before season, I got a picture of him and two other really good bucks, that were with him. So it was kind of a struggle all year trying to stay in that area, trying to not knowing he was in there, just trying to stay in that area. It was definitely a test of faith knowing that he was in there.
Yeah. So you see this buck, and then, like, when you show him, does he kind of be like, okay, that's that buck actually from 2 years ago? Or, like, do you think that's the same buck he's seen in there?
Looking at it, he sent me the video. It's really, really blurry video. You can kind of see the frame of the deer. You can't quite see what he's blown up into. But looking at the video, I don't think it's the same deer, just because the deer that I shot was didn't look like it was as wide as the deer that he sent me a video of. And I don't know if I don't know. I know a whitetail, when they're on their downhill slope, they kind of shrink a little bit. And I don't know, first year, I don't know if mule deer do the same thing, but I don't know what it was. I know that we aged him at about 6 years old, six and a half. So
Okay.
I don't know if it was same buck, though. It didn't really look like it, if you ask me.
Yeah. Yeah. Dang. Okay. So you're like, once you see this buck, are you like, I'm all in on him, or like,
yeah,
what are you thinking when you get him?
Well, when I got this picture of him, I've got a handful, probably 15 to 20 pictures of him, and they're good pictures. Just, you can see everything about him. And when I first seen him, I was pretty locked on this deer. Like, I wasn't willing to shoot any other deer unless it was last day kind of thing. So I was pretty set in on the deer I was going to shoot and spend my tag on.
That's sweet. So, like, leading up to the hunt, did you ever, like, actually lay eyes on him? Or are you still kind of just going off this picture?
So, yeah, I was actually going off this picture until 2 weeks before the hunt. Another one of my buddies, not the same buddy that went with me, but he lives up in Salt Lake. He came down with me, and we drove out there, and we stayed a weekend out there, and we actually laid eyes on him just 2 weeks before season. So we laid eyes on him. We kind of knew the area he was feeding in the evening, and the glassing knob that we were sitting all summer that I was sitting on, I would spot bucks, but it wasn't the area he was in. There was only one specific spot. If you stood up, you can actually see down in there. So we just got lucky to pass through there. And so that right there just told me where we needed to be camped out at. It was kind of a long hike in there. So the buddy that came out and stayed with me, I pinpointed a location we needed to camp and glass from, and it was the perfect location to find that deer. So.
Dang. Okay. That's sweet. So you finally kind of maybe get a little key piece of information, and then kind of talk about like maybe the first couple days leading into the hunt and I guess how it all went down.
Yeah. I had to pick my buddy up from the Las Vegas airport. So he flew in, and we actually didn't get the hunt opening day. He booked his flight, and we didn't realize opening day was the day he booked it. We thought he booked it the day before. Yeah. So opening morning, I was actually not out in the mountain. I was heading down to Vegas to pick up my buddy. And
no way.
We were kind of worried that whole day because, you know, we knew this big buck is in there, and I had seen a couple other hunters. I don't know if they were back in where I was at, but I'd seen their trucks at the trailhead. So heading up there on opening day was kind of a disappointment a little bit, but we got up there, and both of us have never done a backcountry hunt. So we bought a lot of gear to get back in there and kind of prepared for it. And so it was a 4 mile hike in. So we hiked in 4 miles to camp. And that evening we kind of, we only had about 30 minutes to glass because it was just a long day. So we got up there and we glassed for the 30 minutes and really we just saw a couple does and we actually spotted some bears and that was about it. But we went to bed knowing that we were in the right spot and we were actually happy to see we didn't see another hunter back there in that same basin, so we were excited to take on the week.
So that's a big win, not seeing anyone. So you're still, you didn't see any bucks, you're still pretty amped.
Right. I was actually more amped about the no people than not seeing any deer.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
So we're on day two now.
Right.
Okay.
So we get in there Saturday, opening day morning or opening day. We get in there 30 minutes left. And then the next day was Sunday. Sunday was kind of a long day. Not going to lie. We got up and we spotted my number two hit lister. We spotted him about an hour in to glassing. So we spotted him pretty early in the morning and, my buddy that came out was, he tried his darndest to get me to kill him. He it was a really good deer, really good 4-point, and I would be super glad to kill this deer, but just knowing that this giant was in here, it was in the back of my head. I knew I didn't want to shoot this deer on open, especially the first full day we were out there. And I kept telling him no, shoot him. So we went pretty much all Sunday watching that deer and a couple other smaller bucks and a lot of elk. We've seen a lot of elk, and that was about it. But that evening, Sunday evening, we kind of hiked down a little bit to try and get a different vantage point, find some more deer. And when we hiked down, I got a better look at that 4-point, and he just looked better and better every time I looked at him. And it being my first tag, I was like, you know, I don't know. Maybe I should. I kept second guessing myself. And so I decided right before, you know, closing light, I was like, all right, tomorrow, if we find that deer and he beds down in the perfect spot, let's go after him. And so we kind of went to bed knowing that I was going to go after this 4-point. And so we went to bed, and the next morning we woke up and we spotted this 4-point probably 30 seconds into glassing. So it was pretty cool that he was pretty much in the same spot, and he was feeding with 4 or 5 other bucks. And he actually went right over the saddle where it was really thick, and it's hard to spot any deer because I've tried spotting deer in there. It's just so thick. It's really hard to find them, especially if they're bedded. But we kind of decided, we hiked around the saddle and got on the other side to kind of look up this valley where I have seen some deer, and I know that's where the big buck is hanging. I just can never find him. So we decided to go over there. We got over to this ridge I wanted to be to try and glass, and we sat down, we had lunch, and about 11:45, 12 o'clock, I started glassing, and I think I found that deer at 1:15. So it took about an hour and 15 minutes. We found the big buck that I was holding out for. So really, if you look at it, 4-point found the big buck for us. And he was actually only bedded 100 to 200 yards from where my camera had been set up in the summer. So he was he wasn't going far.
How far are you now from where he is right now bedded?
So we found him. I think my buddy ranged him at about 550 yards. So we still had some time to close in on him.
Mm-hmm. But it's still middle of the day. So you.
Yeah. Yeah. We had plenty of time, and he was bedded down he was bedded down in a really bad spot, but we only watched him for 15 to 20 minutes. I got some footage of him, and he stood up and he re-bedded, I don't know, 100 yards closer to the basin we wanted him in, and he bedded down in almost the perfect spot. There was a little bit that was kind of iffy of putting a stock on him, but he was in a really good spot to put a stock on him. And so we began, it was a 2-hour hike to get over on top of him to come back down. But it was a 2-hour stock to get on top of him. And that stock actually was the first stock, and it didn't actually work out. We got on top of him, and it started raining, and he ended up standing up and kind of working off. And I was only 50 yards from where he was originally bedded. I had snuck down and I couldn't find him in his bed, and my buddy had stayed back behind me to kind of watch him. And I didn't see him, and I'd seen him about 120, 150 yards away just feeding off. So I snuck back up to my buddy, and as I got back up to him, I realized that was a mistake because he had turned back around, and he walked right past his bed at 50 yards where he should have been 50 yards, and I wasn't able to shoot.
No way. No way. So, that's kind of a heartbreaker right there. He is so close. So that's that day. It's pretty rainy too. So then after he moved off and kind of goes back through the bed, do you guys kind of lose him at that point, or do you still have eyes on him?
So when he went past the bed, man, the wind was everywhere. So we were hoping that that rain would kind of knock it down, and the rain had stopped, and he had picked up our wind. So yeah, it was a major heartbreaker because he picked it up, but it wasn't like he knew where we were or saw us, because he kind of only just trotted off. He didn't like just bolt off where he was gone. So we saw him bolt.
Okay.
And it was heartbreaking watching that big of a deer just run off, a 200-inch deer just running away. It was definitely a heartbreaker. We were down for the rest of the evening. But he went over in the basin where we wanted him to be. He actually, where our camp was, we could actually spot that whole basin. So we had that little bit of hope. And so that was Monday. That was all day Monday. So we actually hiked back to camp. It took us a couple hours to get back to camp. It's just steep country back there, but we got back to camp, and we had about 45 minutes to an hour left of light to spot. And, as soon as I sat down, I put eyes on him in about 15 seconds. He was 400
yards. No way.
Where we jumped in, he was only 400 yards just feeding on that hillside. So we ended up just filming him the rest of the evening and kind of regrouping for morning.
Jeez, that's kind of exciting though. Like you're getting eyes on them and have a super close call. So
yeah,
I'm sure like spirits are kind of up. You probably, I mean, you're like, I can actually kill this deer. Like
yeah. After that first stalk, I was like, well, we got within shooting range because. I mean, I was very, very comfortable with shooting out to 80, 90 yards. I shot my spike elk last year at 80 yards, so I was feeling very comfortable at shooting this deer at 80-plus yards. So we were definitely in bow range. I goofed it up on my part, I guess.
Yeah. So that all that happened in day two?
It would have been day three of the season, but
day three, okay.
But day two
day
for
us. Day two of hunting.
Like,
yeah. Okay. So he's kind of in the basin you want him now for this next day?
Yep. And so, yeah, so we went to bed just kind of have good hopes on killing this deer, and so we went to bed, and it was a full moon or close to a full moon that night, so we were kind of worried. It looked like a spotlight just hitting that hillside, so we were kind of worried that he was going to move around a lot, knowing that he had a lot of light, and he was going to feed back over into his original spot. But we were hoping that us spooking him would keep him in this basin, so we went to bed with a little bit of hope, knowing that he was there. And we woke up and we had breakfast, and about as soon as you could put eyes through the binos and see the hillside, we found them again with, I think there was 6 or 7 bucks there. There was a pretty big bachelor group, and our number two hit lister and him were together this time. So we were
doing
good at sneaking in on some really good bucks. So. We watched him, so I think we spotted him. It would have been about 7 o'clock. We spotted him, and he fed till almost, I think it was 9:50, almost 10 o'clock. So we watched him for a good 3 hours before we actually make a play on him. And we didn't think he was ever going to bed because he was feeding so much, but. We decided to be patient instead of going in there and blowing him out, and he bedded in, I would say, the perfect spot to stalk on a deer. He bedded in. He was only about 30 yards from the ridge, and good wind is all we needed. So
that's crazy. That's actually super interesting that it was like nearly a full moon, and you'd think like on a full moon they'd hurry and go to bed quick, you know, after feeding all night. But be fed that long. That's kind of an interesting thing. So he's in the perfect spot now, like you said. Sorry, I kind of interrupted you. I thought that was crazy. So, he's 30 yards off the rim, pretty much.
Yeah, he's only 30 yards from the top. So if I got to the top, it'd be a pretty close shot, which is every bow hunter's dream, right? To get that close to a deer.
Right.
So yeah, that morning we watched him. He finally bedded, and it was quite funny. Me and my buddy looked at each other and we're like, if we're gonna kill this deer, that's the bed we're gonna kill him in. Like there's no other way that. If we mess this up, we're not gonna kill him. So we're pretty excited about this, and it's a pretty brutal hike over there. It's just super steep, rocky, and it rained the day before, so it was a little muddy. So it was kind of brutal getting over there, but we kept in our minds, and actually at this point we kept saying 180 inches. We didn't actually know he was up there at 200. We knew he was a big deer, but I guess we just aren't good at field judging. But we were just like, there's 180 inch deer, just keep pushing, we can kill this deer. And so we got up to we were 300 yards from where he was bedded, and we were using Onyx maps the whole time to kind of look at the topography and kind of go to different points to where we wanted to hit so that we could have the best stock. And we got to a point, and my buddy had looked at me, and he's like, "Dude, I don't know. Let's." He's like, "Why don't we just say a prayer? I mean, why not just have a little bit of extra help?" And I said, "Why not? Let's do it." So we just said a quick prayer and went on. And I think half that was just to be safe, just because of how steep and rocky it was. But we got down to about 120, 115 yards, and we ended up taking our packs off, and we didn't know we were actually that close yet, but we took our packs off. We actually brought Hey Dudes with us as stocking shoes. We felt like that was gonna be best. So we threw our Hey Dudes on, took our boots off, and made our little stock, and we started our way, and we got to, I think we were 80 yards from him, and I was like, "Yeah, hey, our shoes are being way too loud. Let's kick them off." So we kicked our shoes off and went barefoot, and made a world of difference, just super quiet. But there was a couple points where we were checking the wind, and we're kind of worried that the wind was going to take it over. He was just over the saddle from us, and there was a couple times it swirled that really, really worried us that it would take us over. But luckily it wasn't strong enough winds that it kind of swirled a little bit. And right after that, after we got worried, man, the wind picked up, and it was perfect wind. It was coming right at our face, and it was loud enough where any noise that we made, it would cover. So we kind of snuck up to 45 yards. I had my buddy range the tree. We actually saw the tip of the tree he was bedded under, and he was with five or six other bucks. So we were kind of worried we were going to jump a buck, so we were kind of taking it real, real slow. But I had him range the tree that we were almost certain he was under, and thanks to Onyx, we actually were able to pinpoint the exact location he was bedded. And we ranged it at 45 yards, and I knew that if I got 10 yards closer, my top pin was my 20 to 30 yard pin. So I knew that if I got 10 yards closer, all I needed was my top pin. So I snuck up to the tree, and I had actually got to a point where I saw antlers, and I knew it wasn't the big buck. It was just a little buck. He was kind of high and tight. It was just a little 2-point, and he was staring right at me. And I was kind of worried that
Oh, shoot.
I mean, he was. I think I took a couple extra steps before I even saw him too, and he was only 8 yards from me, just right through some brush. And so
No way.
my buddy was right behind me, just 2 steps behind me, and he said that he didn't see the deer. So I told him, I was like, "Dude, I gotta pull back and stand up, or this deer is gonna blow our stock. Like, we're 30 yards from this tree. I gotta pull back and stand up." And he's like, "Well, let's not do that. We don't see the buck yet." And so he said, well, if you feel like that, just go for it. So I pulled back, kind of crouched down and stood up with me pulled back in that 2 point. I mean, he knew I was there, so he bolted right away, and which kind of helped because he was right in the shot of the big buck. So he bolted out of the way, and the big buck didn't even know what was going on. He stood up, kind of looked right at me, and by the time he looked at me, I released my arrow right in his chest cavity.
No way. That is crazy. So you shot him from, like, 30 yards.
That's pretty cool. He 28 yards.
Jeez. And I think, like, something to pick up on, like, that you did that was super smart is, like, you drew and then you stood. Like, I think, like, curiosity would get the better of a lot of people. Like, they kind of want to try to peek over. But like, if you wouldn't have drawn and been ready and then stood, like, you might have not have got a shot, especially since that one bolted. They were probably about ready to go. So
yeah, there was no way. If I stood up and drew back, there was no way. I mean, he took one tiny step before I shot, and if he went another yard or two, he would have been in brush, and there was no way. So it was a lot of luck, and I'm glad that I actually thought of that, because I do get curious, especially hunting. I do want to see the animal before I, you know, make sure it's the right animal, because I want to shoot the right one. But I'm glad I made that decision to do that.
And then you were talking about, like, your Onyx. So when you, like, glassed them bedded under that tree, you marked where he was from there, right? So then that's kind of how you knew where to sneak in. That was super smart too, because, like, so many times I've, like, gone on a stalk or something, it looks so different from a different angle, but to kind of have that reassurance with your pin, that makes a big difference. That was smart.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it was the perfect tree that he could have been under. There was a big group of evergreens just right above him. There's probably 10 or 15 evergreens in a group, and then there was one single one, and he was underneath that single one. And it was a good 20 to 30 yard difference between those. And so from the trees that we walked in and to him there, I mean, he was a single tree, and it was pretty easy to mark, but we did take a couple minutes to make sure we had that mark so we could get to him.
Yeah. So you shoot him, like, do you watch him fall, or, like,
no,
go through that?
Yeah. So we're actually almost like halfway up the mountain, just to kind of put it into perspective, to get from the bottom of the mountain where we're at, the bottom of the basin to the top, it was I think it was 0.7 miles up to the top, and it was 1,200 feet in elevation gain. So it was super steep.
Jeez.
And we were halfway up, so we were setting pretty good, and I shot him halfway up, and he ran straight down to the bottom, and we heard him tumble at about 80 yards, and he just tumbled all the way down. I mean, just kept going. So I shot him with a G5 dead meat, and that G5 dead meat did some work, and he only went about 80 yards, and he was dead within 10 minutes. So,
oh man, that's awesome. So kind of, like, go through, like, your feelings and stuff, like, walking up to a buck of that size, like, especially if you thought he was, like, maybe a 180 type deer, like, I'm sure he grew as you walked up to him, like, kind of just go through that. And
yeah, so, I mean, one of the biggest things I kind of hate is ground shrinkage. When you walk up on a deer and it's a lot smaller than what you thought it was, this was total opposite. This was ground growth. I mean, we walked up on it, and I couldn't believe my eyes. I was in shock, and my buddy actually got it got my reaction on camera walking up to it. I was kind of speechless. didn't really know what to say when we walked up to it and picked up his head, and I was so grateful that I was able to, I mean, hunt that deer. It was such a fun hunt, and just I'm still speechless. He's a giant deer.
Yeah, he's a mega giant. That is so cool. Like, there's nothing like walking up on a big deer like that. Like, it's just like you can't even put it into words, and then you just want to try to do it again and have those same feelings and emotions, especially like with you, how you were like, you knew that deer, like you got trail cam pictures of him and then like got eyes on him before the season and then almost
Yeah.
killed him a day or two before. So that's
Yeah,
sweet.
that's one of my favorite things to do with deer is to have some history with them and so actually just going back just a little bit, when we found this deer, I like naming deer like a lot of other hunters do, and so we actually had, I think, four of the deer that we had on camera consistently named, and we named this one Playboy just because he was just bigger and better than everybody. So yeah, it was just kind of a neat.
Yeah. That is neat. That's so cool. So, if you don't mind me asking, like, did you put a tape to him and, like, what were some of his measurements if so?
Yeah, so off the top of my head, I can't quite remember a lot, like all of them, but I do know the kicker on his right side. Or I'm sorry, I'm trying to take it back. His kicker on his yeah, his kicker was 9 inches long, and then his main beam on both sides actually were pretty close. They're just over 26 inches main beam, and
Wow.
he was 23 inches wide, from inside to inside. And if you go from the outside of the kicker to the very outside of the other side, it was 31 inches wide.
That's so awesome.
But the thing that got me the most, and what I'm just impressed as, is his mass and how much he carries it. So the very base of his antlers are just under 6 inches, and the last measurement that we
Jeez.
measured, 5 inches up on his G2, was 5 inches thick.
Nuh-uh. That is
Yeah,
crazy.
he carried, so we did the math just in his main beam width and mass. I think he was over 120 inches.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
Jeez. So then what did he end up going overall? I can't remember what you.
So we had the taxidermist measure it out for us. So me and my buddy actually, we went into town and we measured him in the parking lot of a hotel. We actually dropped the tailgate and we measured him right there at 215 inches. I think it was 215
Jeez.
and an eighth. And we had our taxidermist measure it at 217 and a half.
Wow. That is
Yeah.
so impressive. That is crazy.
Yeah, it was pretty surreal when I saw those numbers. I was just I've never held or seen a 200-inch deer in real life. I mean, the biggest deer I've ever held was a 180-inch deer, and that was, one that was on the wall from someone.
Yeah, and then you blow past 200 with like 217.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So,
Yeah.
just to kind of like wrap up, I know it's getting late here, but like what do you think like were some of the difference makers on like getting this buck killed, or like something you learned from this buck that like maybe the listeners can take and apply to their own hunts?
The biggest thing I learned from this hunt, I think, would be patience. Just on kind of a couple aspects. Me and my buddy just wait. Like when we did find him, and when we watched him for 3 hours, before he actually bedded down. I think just wait until they do bed down, and even if it's not in a good spot. I mean, we had all week, and we told each other. Like we even second guessed each other on this that spot. We were just like, is that a good enough spot to go after this deer? And I think just being patient, a lot of times that when you have a big deer like that on site, you want to go after him right away. You want to go kill him. And I think just being a little more patient and kind of looking at the grand scheme of things and just, okay, let's mark where he's bedded so that we can, get in on him. And and let's make sure that that's the perfect spot so we know that we can kill him, and let's make a game plan. And I think just patience overall is the biggest thing I took from it.
Yeah, just listening to your story, like I do think that played a huge role. Like it'd be so hard to be watching them for that long, like feed that morning and like not just try to go in and go after them. But when you watched him and he bedded down, he was stationary. And like you said, in a pretty good spot, like that's kind of the difference maker. So
right.
I think that's some super good advice on that. And then I think like you're dropping an onyx pin, like where he is, especially like if you're alone, like that's a super good idea too. So I think you did a lot of things right. And then like we talked about before, like you didn't know exactly where he was, but like you drew and then kind of looked, and I think that's kind of what killed the deer there too. So
yeah,
I think there's a lot to learn from your story, and I enjoyed listening to it. So I really appreciate you getting on. I know it's kind of late at night, but I'm glad I got to hear it. And I think a lot of people will enjoy hearing it too. So thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry I'm so hard to get a hold of.
No, that was my fault too. So we weren't lining up, but I'm glad I got to hear it.
Hey guys, wasn't that an awesome story? Thanks again for listening to the Dirty Giants podcast. It really means a lot. And whatever platform you're listening to, if you could leave a review on it, it goes a long ways and really helps grow the podcast. I appreciate you guys, and hopefully we get another episode out here soon. Thanks.